Welcome to our paranormal afterlife. This is our paranormal afterlife, and I'm your host, Simon Bowne. At our paranormal afterlife, my mission is to explore evidence that we continue beyond physical death. These episodes encompass reincarnation, near-death experiences, spirit communication, deathbed visions, and other extraordinary phenomena. If you want to hear the extended version of this episode, please join the Patreon campaign. And please look out for my other podcast. It's called the Alien UFO Podcast. This week, I'm talking to Phil Webster about his book, Glowing Deeper. Phil Webster is an author, actor, and developing medium. In his first book, Letting Glow, he documents his journey into mediumship and sets out to demystify the mystical, making the unfolding and development of psychic senses accessible to us all. Phil has been a guest on over 50 podcasts and radio shows, including the world-famous Coast to Coast AM. Well, hi, Phil. Thanks a lot for coming on the podcast.
Hi, thanks for having me on.
Well, we're going to talk about your books called Glowing Deeper, but I think this is the second one, isn't it? Could you tell us what is the plan with your books? Are you doing three?
Yeah, ideally, I've sort of conceived it as a trilogy. I've started writing the third, but I think it's actually turning into something else. So I think it's not actually going to be the third book of the Letting Glow trilogy. But yeah, the first one came out April last year. And I, pretty much when I'd finished writing it, I felt like I'd learned so much about sort of spiritual practices and mediumship and all this stuff that I just had another book in me. Yeah, so I just kind of wanted to keep going. So that's where the second one came from.
And so what is it that is the sort of the core of what you're doing from a spiritual point of view?
I think that my personal story is I feel like I'd always had these kind of calls to action over my whole life. I'm 48 years old now, and I sort of dismissed them. And it would seem that every few years something would come along. Just like an odd thing that I couldn't put my finger on, or something really profound. I guess I'll get to those in a bit. And I sort of dismissed them until something happened around when my mum passed. And then I kind of looked back on all these things and I was like, oh, this seems to be like something's been, you know, tapping me on the shoulder, for want of a better expression, for all these years. And it sort of took losing my mum and going through like a very profound grieving experience to kind of wake me up to that. So from the books, I would just hope that I sort of poured my own grief into it. And then I learned about mediumship. I learned a lot about different spiritual practices. There's a lot of meditations in both books. And so my sort of idea here is that hopefully it could be useful to someone that's going through the grieving process, or that's experiencing some sort of spiritual awakening, or that just wants to learn more about, you know, spiritual aspects of things.
So can you tell us about the dream you had where you said goodbye to your mum?
Yeah, sure. So that kind of follows on. It was kind of something had happened the night before my mum passed, which I've talked about a lot. And then the next day, I guess I could go back and talk about that in a bit, because I do talk about that one a lot, which was the first book. But the second book, I've just kind of started it with the day that I got down to the Isle of Wight, where my mum had lived for the last 20 years. I'd got the call that morning that she'd passed. And it was just at the tail end of everything COVID. So just getting from London to the Isle of Wight wasn't as straightforward as I was hoping it would be. There were only like the car ferries running and they were only going every couple of hours. So I'd got the call at 8 a.m, but I think I didn't, you know, I took off straight away, but it took the whole day to just get down there. And it was a very, you know, sorry to start off on a bit of a somber note, but it was very, you know, walking into that house, it was my childhood home. It was a very sort of overwhelming experience. You know, it had always been my kind of, I've traveled around the world a lot, and that was kind of always my, you know, beacon of light to sort of come back to. And it was odd, you know, just walking in there and always expecting my mum to be there. And of course, this time she wasn't. So it was a very, yeah, anyone that's been through that, it's an awful experience. And I kind of don't remember much of the day, but I went to bed that night and I would kind of be in and out of sleep. I slept in my mum's bed that night. And it was just a, you know, it was a very overwhelming thing to, for anyone to go through. But at some point, I'd had a dream in the night, and it was the most vivid dream I've ever had. And my mum was there, and we were in a room, and it was like this room of sort of everything was moving. All the walls were kind of like swirling colors, and like I say, it was very very visceral. And she was there, and she was standing in front of me, and she was touching her chest, and she was saying, "Well, I don't understand what's happened." And I said, "Well, they're saying that it was your heart." I felt that it was very much like she was at that point of leaving. And you know, I've put this down as a dream officially, but it felt, again, it felt so realistic, and it was really as though I were witnessing her transition. And she kind of said, "Well, are you going to be away?" And I was like, "Mom, I'm going to be fine. You know, you've got to do this." And she turned to go, and I woke up in floods of tears. And again, you know, I suppose at the time I wasn't really sure what to do with that. But then in all the other things that have happened around my mum passing and what it's led to and things that I've learned about since, I'm not unconvinced that it wasn't some sort of, you know, shared death experience. Of course, there was a period of time that passed between my mum passing away that morning and then me having that dream later that night. But that's a whole other kettle of fish that I could go into about time being nonlinear and all the rest of it. But yeah, that's kind of how the second book opens. The rest of it isn't as depressing as that. There's a lot of positivity that's come through. There's a lot more going on. That's just kind of just somewhat ties it into the original story in my first book, which really prompted everything to sort of to look at things from this new perspective.
You say that you got calls to action. Is that like you're saying you had signs, some kind of like little spiritual things? Is that what you mean?
Yeah, for sure. Some sort of more profound than others. I think really to just sort of go back to it, I'll just have to sort of tell you what happened the night before my mum passed. I'm sort of going in reverse order here a little bit. But just before she passed, and I wasn't expecting her to pass away. She was 76 years old, and I thought she would be, you know, around a bit longer. There wasn't any signs of anything other than a few sort of age-related health problems. But we would FaceTime every day, and I hadn't seen her for a while through the pandemic. And I called her on the night before she passed, and again, unaware that was what was about to happen. And as she answered the FaceTime call, there was a man leaning in from the other side of the screen. And I saw him long enough that I could describe him. He had thinning gray hair and glasses, looked like he was around, you know, late 60s, something like that. And I said to my mum, and as she kind of moved the phone, he went out of shot. And I said, "Well, who's that?" And she said, "Who's what?" And I said, "Well, I just saw someone." I said, "The guy, who's the guy?" You know, and it was 10 o'clock at night. I was in London. She was on the Isle of Wight. And she said, "Well, no, there's no one here," and just kind of dismissed it. And started talking about her day. And I kind of pushed her a little bit on it. And I said, "Well, Mum, I just saw somebody. I didn't want to freak her out." But she just sort of chatted away as normal. And I could always tell when there was somebody with her because she would usually put on all these airs and graces and all this kind of stuff. And we talked for about another 45 minutes. And I thought, well, I guess I was mistaken, you know. And didn't sort of see any sign of this person again. I didn't recognize him. And you know, we spoke for about 45 minutes and I went to bed that night. And then, of course, the next morning, I got the call that she passed. So through all of the experience that I just told you about the next night, and then through all of the sort of grieving process, my mind kept going back to this guy. I was like, "So, you know, what are we talking here? Are we talking spirit guides or ghosts or what?" And at the time, I wasn't kind of really, really well-versed in any of this. So I just sort of kept coming back to that. I was like, "Well, you know, the sort of the logical explanation that I could come up with was that was somebody letting me know that she was about to pass." And so that was really the sort of the trigger for all of this, for writing the book. And then looking back at other things that had happened over the years. Like I said, there seemed to be like every few years something would come along. One of the more profound experiences that I had was in my mid-30s. And I was living in Helsinki at the time. I'd traveled around a lot and I've been away from the UK for about 20 years. And at the time I was running bars and clubs, so I was kind of living a bit of a hedonistic, cynical life, really. I was kind of, you know, working every night, sleeping through the day, pretty much seeing people at their worst, you know, when people are drunk and, you know, that whole sort of environment, which I kind of thought was normal at the time, not realizing that it's not really that normal. You know, you're kind of existing on the fringes of society somewhat. And I woke up one particular morning, nothing particularly eventful around it. And I was just kind of laying there and sort of musing over this idea that all we really have is the moment of now, you know. We kind of like have thoughts of what we did yesterday or what we're going to do later, but we only ever really experience anything like in this moment of now. We just kind of get caught up in our thoughts. And, you know, and I'm not the first person to talk about this, and it wasn't an idea that I hadn't heard before, you know. But it was seemed that something shifted like very profoundly, and it was as though linear time fell away. And all of a sudden, it was as though I was sort of outside of myself, observing my own thoughts. And it was suddenly like now, like, and I couldn't switch it off. I couldn't just suddenly drift off and think, well, you know, what did I do last night? Or what am I going to do even in 5 minutes? It was just suddenly like now, now, now. And I couldn't stop it. And it was overwhelming. And people talk about, you know, connecting to the moment of now and all that stuff. This was like that times 1,000. And I kind of flew into a panic attack, you know, I have to admit. And I kind of tried to walk it off, and all of it just didn't stop. It was just now, 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 all the time. Like I couldn't just sort of switch off or drift off into my thoughts. And I went to work that night and sort of tried to explain to my colleagues what was going on. And they looked at me like, okay, well, no idea what you're talking about. And this just kept, it just didn't stop. I barely slept. And then when I did, it would just all start all over again. It was just now, 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 all the time. I just couldn't sort of relax and think about what I was going to eat for dinner later or something like that. And this went on for weeks. And to the point that I started getting a bit concerned about, you know, my mental health. And I went to a doctor, and the doctor used the word psychosis, which kind of, you know, terrified me even further. I never thought that that was going to be on my horizon. And gave me some anti-anxiety meds, gave me sleeping pills, and sent me away. The sleeping pills would knock me out. The anti-anxiety pills didn't touch it. And I would just wake up and this whole thing would start all over again. It was almost like a spotlight was being shone on me, and I felt like I was just in this ultimate awareness of the moment of now, basically. And it's kind of impossible to sort of describe. It was such a profound experience. But anyway, it kept on, and I went to see another doctor, same diagnosis, psychosis. Albeit he said it was mild because I was somewhat holding down my job and my relationship at the time. And this just went on for months, to the point that I thought, okay, this isn't working for me anymore. And I don't want to take this down a dark path, but I really started thinking, well, if this is the way that my brain works now, then I think I'm out of here, you know. And I didn't see any tragedy in that. I just kind of, this just didn't work. I felt like on a completely different, I don't know, in a completely different reality to what everybody else seemed to be in. Sorry, this is quite a long-winded story.
That's okay.
Eventually, I found a psychiatrist, and what attracted me to him was that he was a hypnotist. So I was like, okay, I'm just going to go see this guy, and I just want him to like zap this away. You know, I just want to get back to the herd. I want to worry about the bills. I want to, you know, be making sure I catch my bus on time and just stop whatever the hell was going on. And he listened to me tell the story that I just told you. And he said, no, he said, you're not, you know, losing your mind. He said, what you're going through is an awakening. He said, you're experiencing, you know, reality as it ultimately is. And he started using words like calling me a mystic. And I started thinking that he was nuts at that point. I wasn't interested in it. You know, it didn't mean anything to me. And I was like, okay, well, that's great. But, you know, can you just make this stop? And thankfully, you know, I'd found like the one medical professional that seemed to have a bit of an alternate side to him that seemed to know what I was going through. And he gave me a very basic grounding meditation, just led me through a guided meditation, which pretty much brought me back instantly. It didn't last. I had to sort of practice this meditation every day. I recorded him doing it. But it pretty much brought me back. And this was like a good 6 months in, where I was literally at the end of my rope. And very, very gradually, I sort of came back, you know, to join everybody else. And you know, I'd have one good day a week and then two good days a week and so on. And over about the course of a year, I was kind of, you know, back online or offline, depending on, you know, how you look at things. And it was a very profound experience, but I didn't attribute it to any kind of spiritual sort of awakening at all at the time. It wasn't really where my head was at. But in hindsight, and then learning about all the things that I've learned through researching these books about different sort of esoteric traditions, you know, from thousands of years ago, and it seems that this is actually a thing. And since writing the first book, I've had a few people write to me and say, well, yeah, you know, they have also been through that, that they thought they were losing their mind, but it turns out this is kind of more common than you would think. That being said, I'm not dismissing mental illness by any means, but I do wonder, you know, if this is kind of more misdiagnosed than we're led to believe.
Yeah, that's interesting.
It's a lot, sorry.
I remember reading about a psychiatrist, and this was like 100 years ago, maybe 150, where he was working with people with schizophrenia and they'd hear these voices in their head. He treated them in such a way as to think, okay, these voices are real people or their spirit communication or something.
Yeah.
And so he said to the patients, just talk to the voices and just say, hey, can you give me a break for like half an hour or something? And the voices would stop.
Hmm. Interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, yeah, thankfully didn't hear any voices. And again, not meaning to belittle anybody that would be going through something like that. But yeah, I mean, it was a very overwhelming experience and I was just glad to be out of it. There was a couple of other instances, but I feel like I'm rambling a lot. Forgive me. but yeah, just essentially the sort of the catalyst to look back on all these things was my mum passing and then seeing that guy on the phone call, which, you know, and I still didn't know who he was. You know, he didn't look like an uncle or anything like that. But I, you know, and of course I wasn't there, so I can't 100% say that there was absolutely no one with her. But knowing her routine, she was on the Isle of Wight. It's very rural. We were in a lockdown. There shouldn't have been anyone there that night. And she didn't acknowledge this person. So, yeah, I came to the conclusion that, okay, that was, you know, that was somebody trying to let me know. And that kind of really opened the door to, you know, looking into mediumship.
Hello, this is me, Simon. Did you know that during a past life regression, you can meet with your spirit guide? I conduct past life regression sessions over Zoom, and I've guided many clients to a spiritual encounter with their guide. If you would like to ask me how a session would work for you, you can book a free 20-minute consultation on my website, pastliveshypnosis.co.uk. The link is in the show notes. You've been training to be a medium, haven't you? But it's not something you do as a profession. You don't charge for anybody.
No, I have been. So one of the first books that I came across, I was working at the time sort of sporadically as an actor, and I use the word very loosely, but right after my mum passed, I had a good stretch of work on one of these big Marvel superhero movies. And I'd been waiting for it, you know, for a few months now because there hadn't been any work through 2020. And I pretty much started on it the day after. So I for some reason, I just always feel like this experience of working on that movie is completely entwined with what I went through after losing my mum. So we would have a lot of time between takes, and I just basically started reading a lot of sort of spiritual literature that I'd maybe stumbled across earlier in life. But again, you know, just sort of generic things like Neil Donald Walsh and stuff like that, you know, sort of traditional sort of spiritual literature. And then I came across a book by a medium called Claire Broad, who's based in the UK. I didn't know that she was based in the UK. I just kind of was attracted to the title of her book, which is called What the Dead Are Dying to Teach Us. And interestingly, as soon as I opened the book, the first story that Claire shared about her first sort of experiences as a medium when she was a kid took place right across the street from where I was living in London, which was really, you know, I put it down to coincidence at the time, but I could literally look out of my window and see the cemetery that she was talking about where her book opened. Anyway, it really resonated with me, the whole book. It was a very comforting book. And pretty soon after, I saw that she had a, and then I looked her up, you know, I didn't know where she was from beforehand. And then I saw that she was given a workshop at the College of Psychic Studies in London, which at the time sounded ridiculous to me. You know, it's like the College of what? You know. But I went along and sort of told Claire these stories that I've just told you. And she was kind of the first person to be like, oh, yeah, you know, that makes perfect sense, you know. And sort of gave me a few explanations to what she thought sort of went down. And we kind of hit it off. So that was really my introduction to mediumship. Pretty soon after that, I walked into a spiritualist church, which I didn't know that these were a thing. And I watched a medium called Janet Neville give a demonstration of mediumship. And she eventually came to me and gave me a message from my mum. And again, that was just another turn, you know, like another game changer, essentially, that really just sent me down this path. So yeah, I've been learning about it for the last 3 years. I'm sitting in a couple of different circles. I've kind of come back to Claire again, and I'm lucky enough to be learning from Claire Broad again. And I feel like it's not necessarily my final destination, but I find it a very interesting process, you know, being able to sort of open up and then being able to give other people evidence of things that I know that I don't know about. It is kind of very gratifying, and I'm still amazed by the whole process, you know. And I'm convinced now, beyond a shadow of a doubt, that we absolutely go on. Yeah.
And did you have a time where you saw one of your spirit guides and then a medium just talked about her spontaneously?
Yeah. In the second book, I sort of go into that. I read back over the second book now, and there was so much enthusiasm that I slightly cringe at how excited I was about all this. But yeah, I mean, you know, it was what I was going through at the time. Everybody, it seems that every medium and their grandmother has a Native American spirit guide. And I don't know, there's somewhat, it feels somewhat culturally inappropriate to, you know, be somebody that grew up on the Isle of Wight talking, saying that I've got a Native American spirit guide. But this seems to be the case. And I'm not quite sure what's behind that. I don't know if they sort of present themselves as just something that, you know, suits us. I've been reading a lot about shamanism in South and North America at the time. And I was meditating one particular afternoon, and yeah, I this lady appeared very clearly and sort of presented herself as my spirit guide. And I thought, all right, okay, but I had spent the day reading about these, you know, cultures. So I wasn't 100%. I was still kind of feeling my way in this first year. I went to a demonstration of mediumship again the next night in a place called Barnes Spiritualist Church. And there wasn't many people there. So I kind of got to sit and chat with a medium that would have been normally given a demonstration that night. And he just brought her up immediately, described what I'd seen, and he said, "Oh, you know, you've got some sort of connection to indigenous Americans." And I was like, "Well, that's really interesting, you know," because he pretty much just clarified everything that I'd seen the night before. So I was like, "Well, I guess I should be again, you know, just taking this seriously." And it felt like in that first year, it was just one thing after another. It was just like one amazing thing after another kept coming up. And again, that's kind of really why I felt I'd got another book in me straight after writing Letting Glow.
And do you feel that the spirit guides, all of our spirit guides, can just kind of present themselves in any way they want?
Yeah, I mean, I think that makes more sense to me than every one of us have got our own personal Native American tribal elder, you know. I think it makes sense. Who knows? Maybe it is that. Maybe it is that, you know. I'm new to this, and I'm sort of trying to be mindful of not stepping on any traditional spiritualist toes. You know, the people who have been doing this way longer than me that's just kind of stepping in and talking about being a medium when it's very, you know, early days for me. But yeah, I mean, it would make sense to me that perhaps they present themselves as something that resonates with us, as somebody that's, you know, of a higher spiritual intelligence than we are. I think they would fit the bill, but I don't know. Maybe there we have actually got Native American spirit guides. I'm not sure.
So when you were younger, though, you did have other kinds of experiences, because you talk about, is it astral projection?
Yeah, so that's it. It's funny, like, sort of talking on these on podcasts and stuff, because it sounds like I've just got one thing after another, you know. And but there were very long stretches of absolutely nothing out of the ordinary, you know. I'd go a good 10 years just worrying about, you know, my next paycheck or paying the rent. And every now and again, something would come up. But yeah, as a kid, growing up in the 80s and 90s, I grew up on the Isle of Wight, and I wandered into an esoteric bookshop in a place called Ryde on the Isle of Wight. And I remember picking up this book on astral projection and sort of leafing through it. And I didn't have any money to buy it at the time. I was probably about 14 or 15 or something. And finding it fascinating. And I just tried to sort of memorize everything that it was saying about what sounded like this really cool thing to do. Is the way I understood it at 14, 15 was that your ghost body got to leave your physical body and fly around the neighborhood. And I thought, all right, I'm going to give this a go. and I went home that night and tried it. And essentially it happened very quickly. I just remember laying there, just concentrating very hard on getting up. I wasn't sort of, well, in any way versed in sort of more advanced techniques of astral projection, which people teach nowadays. I just thought about getting up and didn't get up. And after maybe an hour or so of trying this, I felt myself separate and I felt myself rise above my body. I could still feel myself laying on the bed, but I had this very amazing feeling of floating above. And as far as I remember, it felt like flying should feel, you know, like kind of when you dream about flying, it feels like a familiar sensation somehow. But anyway, and the thing that I wasn't counting on was I had a third perspective from the side of the room, and it was as though I was sat beside the bed and I could see myself laying on the bed and I could see myself floating above the bed, but I was somehow watching this from a third angle, and that just kind of threw me off completely. I hadn't read anything about this, and it was way too much for my, you know, teenage brain to comprehend at the time. And I just kind of snapped myself out of it. And weirdly enough, it just, each time I would relax after that, it would start happening again. I would start separating. And I was kind of pacing around the house through the night. Because every time I went to try to go to sleep, I would just start floating away again. Anyway, I guess I eventually fell asleep. And, you know, I went to school the next day and told my friend, and he was like, okay, yeah, cool. And that was that. And I thought, well, how weird, you know, and some weird years went by, and I was watching This Morning, you know, the sort of mainstay TV show in the UK, daytime TV, and they had a psychic. People were calling in to speak to a psychic, and a man called in and he described the same experience, and he talked about how he described it as though he were the wall, watching himself on his bed and watching himself float above the bed. So it kind of validated that memory, which I'd start to doubt had happened, you know. And I thought, okay, well, I guess that really did happen. So yeah, once again, just another of something or other would pop up every few years. And again, just sort of bringing it back to my mum passing and then writing these books, I finally feel that, okay, I probably should have acknowledged this long ago, you know, because now it actually feels like, all right, this was, without sounding too grandiose, it feels like this was somewhat my destiny all along. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Because not a lot of people can do this astral projection thing.
Yeah. I mean, I haven't really explored it since, funnily enough. I've been sort of so concentrated on sort of mediumship and connecting with guides and all that stuff. Yeah. I haven't really put any effort into it. But yeah, it should be probably something I should try again.
Well, I quickly ask you about your friend Gerard as well, because he had out-of-body experiences.
Yeah. Yeah, this is funny as well, because me and Gerard, so we worked together in Helsinki in a couple of different bars. We would end up sort of crossing paths a lot over a few years. And during that time, and this was kind of, I think this was after the sort of whole experience where I thought I was going out of my mind. And I was just kind of very glad to be sort of back. And again, I wasn't thinking about anything spiritual at all at the time. So me and Gerard we'd work together, we'd hang out, but we never had a single conversation about anything esoteric or anything like that. So I sort of knew him all these years without knowing any that he had this whole other side to him. And he recently told me after we spoke about me writing the first book that he'd had an experience somewhat, I suppose, he described it as a astral projection experience. It could also be argued that it was remote viewing, perhaps, but he's the way he described it was talking of it as that he, you know, astrally went somewhere else and had these experiences. But one was that he was in meditation, and he's based in Iceland. He's from Catalonia, but he's based in Iceland. And he said during meditation, he was suddenly on a plane with his brother and his brother's wife. And he just took note of everything that they were ordering, like they were ordering drinks at the time, took note of their clothes, and came out of the meditation, tried to call his brother. He couldn't get in touch with him because his brother's phone was off because he was on a flight, which he hadn't known previously. And then when he eventually got through to him, his brother pretty much confirmed everything that he'd seen. And then some time later, I'm sure he doesn't mind me telling this story because I've wrote about it. Sometimes later, his grandfather passed away. And again, he was kind of stuck in Iceland with work obligations. So he thought, all right, well, I'm going to try this again. And he believes that he went to the funeral or sent his consciousness to the funeral, at least. He watched the whole process, again, described, took note of everyone's clothes, what his mum was wearing, where his mum was sat during the service, things like that. After the service, they went outside to bury the body. And interestingly, and this is something that I have no sort of knowledge on or theory on, he said there was another being there that wasn't part of the people gathered there, that it was another being sort of in the same form that he was there, that gave him a very strong impression that he shouldn't have been there. And he bravely just ignored it. And he was like, well, you know, no, I'm here for my granddad's funeral, and I'm not going anywhere until it's all done, and left. And you know, he didn't really have any more insight on that. He just said that was his experience. So I wrote about that in the second book, along with another person's experience that I know. So yeah, it's kind of an interesting one, somewhat of an ominous one. But I don't really know what to say on that.
And you have all these meditations in the book that help you go to different levels. And one of your chapters is called Theta, the receiving state.
Mm.
So that theta, that's brainwaves, isn't it?
Yeah. Now I've got to try and sound smart. You're right about these things a lot easier than talking about them. So when we go into a resting state, or when we're just about to fall asleep, or when we're just about to wake up, our brainwaves go into something called the theta state, which is essentially the same state that your brain goes into when you're in deep meditation. And it's also the state that, you know, through science testing a few mediums here and there, it's also the state that mediums go into when they're connecting and giving evidence. So your brain goes into something called the theta state. And it's a very receptive state. And interestingly, I've had a couple of more experiences, particularly when coming out of sleep. One thing was the sort of musing over time being nonlinear and all that stuff. I had another one to do with connecting with guides. But it's interesting because, you know, I think we've all had that experience of you're about to drop off to sleep and you sometimes hear a voice very close to your ear or something like that. I feel that we're very receptive in those states. And that's also, there's a lot of literature and people talking around manifestation techniques that it's kind of best to do at the very least, if you don't meditate or anything like that, to sort of go through your day just at the end of the night, just before you're falling asleep, and kind of sort of condition your brain into being thankful for all that you've experienced that day and sort of put yourself into that state of receiving. I think there's definitely something to it. Yeah.
One other thing I read in the book, which I thought was really interesting, was you were thinking about something and you went to this beach cafe, and there was sign there. So that was fascinating.
Yeah, I mean, that fascinates me still. So just again, during that first year, I kept hold of my mum's house on the Isle of Wight, and I hadn't seen my mum before she passed for a while. And I kind of just used the place as a place to go and grieve, essentially. I haven't really got any other family. I've got a few cousins and stuff. But just around sort of my mum's immediate family, I should say. But yeah, I would go down there and I would just sit in the house and just cry, essentially, and just sort of be with my mum's things. And this went on for a few months. I'm not sure how healthy it was, but we all, you know, do it in our own way when we have to cross that bridge. And one particular night, I was getting kind of frustrated because I was opening up to all this stuff about mediumship. I was doing everything right. I was sitting in meditation. I was trying to connect with my guides. And this was very early days for me. I would say I was probably about 6 months in. But I remember I wanted things to progress quicker. And one thing that I really wanted, even though I'd had evidence from a medium that she gave me about my mum, that I just wanted to hear from my mum, essentially, you know. And this particular night, I was getting very frustrated and I wanted a sign. And I was like, okay, look, I'm just doing all this right. If spirit guides are a thing, then show me something because I'm getting really frustrated with this whole thing. Although it was very early days. And I went down the beach that night. I think it was autumn time, so it wasn't particularly warm or anything. There were a few fishermen lined up along the shore. And I was sitting on the sand and I was in floods of tears and I started kind of verbalizing that, you know, give me something. Like if you want me to do this. Mediums kept telling me that I was supposedly going to be this voice for spirit and all this stuff. And I was kind of like, you know, if this is a thing, then I need something. I need something to keep me going. And I was saying this out loud. These fishermen probably thought I was nuts. And in floods of tears. And I realized then that I'd been sitting next to this beach cafe the whole time. And I hadn't sort of taken much notice of it. And I looked at the specials board. And again, it was out of season. So there was, you know, there was nothing about baked potatoes on there or anything like that. But this board was covered in chalk. And it said my name. Phil, and then all around it said hi, as in H-I, and it said hi, like maybe 25 times. And I was like, okay, all right, well, if that's not a sign, then you know, it's quite literally a sign. I took a photo of it and I just kind of just burst into laughter. You know, it was amazing. I just literally looked to my left. I was asking, give me something. If I've got guides and all that stuff, then I need something more. And this sign said, Phil, hi, everywhere. So I took a photo of it with my phone and it kind of answered my dilemma. I don't think that all of a sudden, you know, a piece of chalk appeared and this got wrote there while I was sitting there. But I believe that, you know, my guides had sort of anticipated my plight and took me to the place where I would get my answer. Yeah. And that also sort of in a roundabout way brings us back to that. Talk about time being nonlinear and all the rest of it.
Yeah, it's that thing somebody said to me once on the podcast that spirits are master orchestrators and how they can connect things up and that it's like they know the future in a way.
Yeah, well, that's it. I feel that that's such an... that I always sort of come back to that whole we've only got the moment of now thing and it's a lot. It's a lot to take in. But I feel that The more that I'm writing, I'm tending to write about that at the moment. And it seems to be sort of going beyond mediumship somewhat. And I feel like it's such a interesting concept. I mean, it's not a concept, it's the truth, right? But it's a lot to wrap your head around. But kind of when you do sort of tap into it, it really does open up this idea of multiple possibilities, multiple universes, all that kind of fun stuff that we can really do anything from this moment of now because all we have is now and it opens up a whole other stuff. So that would suggest that everything that's ever happened is happening right now and every possibility that ever could happen is essentially happening right now. So yeah, it's a lot.
Yeah, it kind of links in with reincarnation in a way because you know, if there's no time passing in the afterlife, that means your soul's experiencing all your lives in the same moment.
Yeah, there's that too. You know, there's so much that you can do with this. And you know, we just sort of go along with it because, I mean, it's the way things are set up. You know, we haven't got any other choice. We, you know, we go from moment to moment and that's what we're caught up in. But yeah, it does open up so many doors. You know, like you said, past lives, are we already, you know, if this theory is correct, then it stands to reason that we've already died in this lifetime on some sort of timeline. So we're already there. It's crazy.
Yeah. But there's one thing you say in the book, and I think you kind of say in the book, I'm sorry I keep saying this, but you shouldn't confuse your authentic self with your thoughts.
Yeah, all right. That's an interesting one as well, because you know, like a lot of spiritual teachers talk about, you know, you are what you sort of concentrate on, and I think there's validity in that. You know, if you do want to go in whichever direction you want to go in, of course, everything comes from a thought. An example that I use is, you know, we literally manifest all of our thoughts. Nothing doesn't start as a thought. You know, the chair that I'm sitting on existed as a thought in somebody's idea somewhere down the line, and then they, you know, they saw it in their mind's eye, and then they put it into motion and made that chair in whatever way that they made it. You know, everything that we do originates with a thought. But that being said, if you do start to learn about meditation, and you don't necessarily need to learn about meditation, this is something that, you know, might come easily to some people, but when you can start to recognize that you're the one that's observing your thoughts, then I think that's when you tap into, you know, what I call sort of the backseat driver, or the, you know, your real self, essentially. You know, like if somebody was to call you a name on the street, you would get offended, but you can also recognize that you can see yourself getting offended. You know what I mean? You can take a step back and choose whether to run with those thoughts that are getting all het up, or, you know, you can decide not to, you know, to not go with it. Same things in moments of crisis. I think if anyone's, you know, been involved in an accident or any kind of critical situation, there tends to be this quiet voice at the back of your mind that sort of takes a step back and pulls you back, and you're able to sort of witness what's going on, you know, like a voice of reason. So I think that's what I'm talking about when I talk about our authentic self. You know, we're able to step back from our whole personality and all the things that are constantly bombarding us day and night that we're thinking about. You know, we're thinking about multiple things all the time. So, yeah, I think the meditation is really the key to be able to tune into that. And that's essentially what I meant by that. Yeah.
And would you say your authentic self is your higher self, or is that something different?
Yeah, I would say I'm talking about the same thing. Yeah. And you know, who knows, maybe we're talking about spirit guides as well. I mean, a lot of people definitely grapple with the notion of spirit guides being sort of this separate entity that are just kind of keeping a watch over us and all that kind of thing. I also think that if that's a difficult sort of concept to agree on, you could just look at it as your higher self. You know, basically the voice of reason that seems to cut through all the clatter. But it takes some time to get there for a lot of people, you know. It's only until you sort of really take that time to sit with yourself and sort of ground yourself in the moment of now. And hopefully I'm not talking about having the overwhelming experience that I had. I think it's important to just be able to take that time with yourself and just be able to recognize that you don't have to get caught up in all the jumble of, you know, this marching parade of thoughts that we're just constantly bombarded with, and be able to recognize that voice that I believe is our authentic higher self. And also when it comes to mediumship, you start to notice the difference between that voice, the constant barrage of thoughts that are going on, and then when something new comes in, you begin to recognize that as not coming from you, that it's not those thoughts over here that are going on about whatever they're going on about. It's not your sort of observer that's over here in the back. Something new comes in, and then you're kind of able to separate it as, all right, that's my guides, you know, or that's information coming in from something that isn't part of me.
And you connect to your guides now, and did it take time? Did you have to a lot of practice and meditation?
It's interesting because I'm still learning who they are. I haven't named, I did name the one that I wrote about. But I personally believe we have more than one. Some mediums would definitely disagree with that. But yeah, I feel that I'm able to connect with them relatively easily. Not even through sort of going into deep meditation or anything like that. I just think I sort of have to make the intention known. When I have given people readings recently, as recently as yesterday, actually. Yeah, they seem to come through pretty quickly and give me that sort of insight that's enough for who I'm talking to. And again, just kind of amazes me because it's just the most random stuff. And I'll just say what I see, and so far so good, to be honest. I don't have a lot to give somebody at the moment. I feel like I'm still, you know, progressing. But so far, I pretty much had like a 99% success rate, I'd say. Yeah.
When you join up with your guides, and what I'm talking about is before you're born, would you say it's something that happens just before you're born, or a long time before you're born, or maybe they're with you through loads of lives?
Yeah, the way that I've been understanding it, and again, sort of writing what I'm writing at the moment, because I believe I'm just sounding more nuts the further this conversation goes, forgive me. But I believe that what I'm writing at the moment is that I'm not writing it, that I'm channeling it. And again, it's kind of a similar process that I'm convinced that I didn't know what I just wrote, you know. And again, it's just this amazing process. And I feel like I'm learning so much as I write this third book. And the way that I've understood it, or what I believe I'm being told, is that, yeah, this has been an ongoing thing for a long time, that we have this blueprint over many lifetimes, and we sort of inch along a little further with each one, that we've come in here with a purpose. Other people have come in with us as well, that we've known previously. And that, yeah, our guides have been a consistent companion through each lifetime and between lifetimes.
And do you feel that they're advanced spirits, like they've incarnated and they've had loads of lives and they've got to a higher stage? They don't have to incarnate anymore, so they can act as your guide because they've got all that experience.
Yeah, absolutely. One interesting thing that I've learned about in writing the what I'm writing at the moment is I was given a kind of a vision of a coliseum or a sort of stadium. And not that there was a hierarchy in the way that we would understand it now, but I was presented with this idea that that's the way to make this make sense to me, because we don't really sort of have the language for it, and we don't really have the capacity to understand it, but we don't really have the bigger scope. And I was kind of shown this kind of levels, you know, if we're on the sort of the pitch. Then we've got like our immediate guides, that, you know, sort of closer down to us, and then the further up it goes, it's sort of the further it goes up and deals with sort of more with the bigger picture. You know, we've got our guides that are sort of helping us through our day to day experiences and our immediate, you know, troubles and what have you, and then sort of the further up you go, the more profound it goes, and more towards the sort of larger objective to what we might have come here for. Yeah.
And you also mentioned soul agreement in the book. Is that you have an agreement with your guides about what you're going to do?
Yeah, I believe so. I believe that's part of it. I think that we've got this, you know, this blueprint, and some of us come here, and it seems to be that a lot of young people these days seem to be sort of right on it, you know, straight off the bat. They seem a lot more aware of the environment, a lot more aware of political issues than certainly my generation was at a young age, and definitely my parents and going further back. But yeah, I believe that we've come here with a purpose, and somewhere along the lines we'll sort of hopefully we're evolving at a soul level, and we'll begin to recognize these things. I mean, it's taken me nearly 50 years. But I feel like I'm sort of finally on the right path to what I was essentially supposed to be doing all along.
Yeah, I see. And with the thing with the soul agreement, so you agreed how this life is going to go. But is this, I don't know how to talk about it, it's like set in stone, and that you can't go off this agreement, or is it more loose
than
that?
I'm not sure about that. Yeah, I mean, again, I'm sort of talking about this as still somewhat as a beginner to these subjects. You know, I'm sort of constantly learning about them, but as I've, and hopefully I don't look back on this and think, oh my God, what was I talking about? But the way I've understood it so far is that, yeah, I don't know necessarily that we all recognize that. You know, we come along here, we're faced with a, you know, life's hard, right? For the most part, and you know, we're dealing with things physically. We are here physically. We definitely shouldn't neglect the physical. But it's easy to get caught up and distracted by all the things that we have to go through here. But again, I feel that when you're able to sort of tune into your authentic self, then that's really when the sort of the bigger picture sort of makes itself more apparent. Yeah, so I believe that that we've all got this, that we're all on this journey. And yeah, I essentially believe that we're all the same soul. And again, I'm not the first person to talk about that. That we're all part of the same source, just kind of individualized as individuals.
It's kind of sparks of the source that is flying off.
That's
all
a
these
much
things.
Better way to put it than I just said by saying individuals.
It's been great talking to you, and thanks a lot for coming on the podcast.
You too. Thanks very much. No, those were some, I'm not sure if I was qualified to answer all the questions, but yeah, doing my best.
Yeah, it's great. So this book's called Glowing Deeper.
Yeah, Glowing Deeper, book two of the Letting Glow trilogy. And yeah, it's available at all the usual spots, Amazon, and you can order it in you know, all the sort of traditional bookstores and yeah, everywhere.
And do you have a website?
Yeah, I do. That's philwebster.com. That's Phil with two L's. Yeah, feel free if anyone wants to get in touch. I'm always sort of happy to talk or hear about other people's experiences and talk about these things. And I'm sort of tentatively thinking about starting an online circle to just sort of get people together. And, you know, we could go through some meditation and stuff like that and maybe lean towards mediumship. But just sort of essentially a place where people can get together and sort of develop further in a sort of safe environment. Yeah.
Oh, great. Okay. Well, thanks again for coming on the podcast.
Well, thanks very much for having me, Simon. Yeah, pleasure talking with you.
And that was an interview with Phil Webster about his book, Glowing Deeper. And if you want to hear the rest of this amazing interview, you can sign up to Patreon. When you sign up for $5 a month, you get an extended episode every week. And for $2 a month, you get an extended episode every month. The Patreon episodes are ad-free and are released 2 days before the free versions. And please check out my other podcast. It's called the Alien UFO Podcast, and I release new episodes every Monday, and you can find it on almost every podcast app. I also have a tier in the Our Paranormal Afterlife Patreon campaign, where for $12.50 a month, you get the Alien UFO Podcast extended episodes every week, as well as Our Paranormal Afterlife extended episodes. Including the Alien UFO Podcast episodes, there are now more than 100 extended episodes available in the back catalogue. You can become a patron by going to patreon.com/ourparanormalafterlife or click on the Patreon button on my homepage at pastliveshypnosis.co.uk. The links are in the show notes. And look out for the Our Paranormal Afterlife episodes called Paranormal Stories, and they're released every Thursday. And there is an Our Paranormal Afterlife Facebook group, and if you'd like to join, you'd be very welcome. And if you enjoy the podcast, please leave a review and be sure to subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or via your favourite podcast app to make sure that you don't miss out on any episodes. And thanks for listening. There was a time where, was it you in bed and you woke up and there was this huge download of information?
Yeah. So again, you know, so, this is so funny to just sort of talk about one experience.